Hello and welcome to The Big Fight. Now, if there's one theme that we keep returning to on The Big Fight, it's the question that the Indian governments, of course, have to confront for several decades now. It's a problem that no one is completely sure what to do about. And that problem, of course, is Pakistan. Now, should you be talking to Pakistan, not talking to Pakistan? Should you be cooperating with them in terrorism or putting them in the dock as a sponsor for terrorism? Or should you, as happened this week, actually inviting a Pakistani team across to help India investigate a terror attack? And that at the same time as you're seeing China, presumably hand in hand with Pakistan, blocking the actual banning of the Jaish chief Masood Azhar, the person ostensibly behind Pathankot, and he's been stopped from being banned as a terrorist leader. So lots to talk about, and this at a time when Pakistan is parading a particular man and saying he's a raw agent whom they have caught, and they're accusing him of terrorism. So what do we make of all of this, and what's the right way forward? What should be done? What should not be done? Sambit Patra joining us from the BJP. We have Mani Shankaraya, senior Congress leader, whose views on how to deal with Pakistan are not always exactly the same as that of the rest of the Congress party, I have to say, but we're still going to get you to take the Congress view here. G. Parthasarathy, former High Commissioner to Pakistan, so knows what it is to deal with what I'm calling the Pakistan problem. RSN Singh is a former RAW officer, strategic analyst, who might give us some insight as to Mr. Yadav is RAW or not RAW, because that's really what's been trending in Pakistan all week long. Dr. Brahma Chelani, of course, one of our top strategic thinkers, professor of strategic studies at the Center for Policy Research. And we're about to be joined just a short while from now from Islamabad by Vice Air Chief Marshal Shahzad Chaudhary, who's a strategic affairs expert. All right, let's just first, before we get to Kulbhushan Yadav and Pakistan's own accusations about India, let's just jump straight into what's actually happening with this Pathankot investigation. And let's just quickly take a couple of minutes to tell you the very latest in the developments there, because this is a fast-moving story. Right, Sambit. Now, here you have a situation, and I guess what's happening with Pakistan is one of the problems that political parties face when they've been in the opposition and they come back into power, because a lot of what you're saying right now are exactly the same things that the BJP in general and Narendra Modi in particular used to pillory the Congress party for when they were in power and you were in opposition. So this entire question of whether you should be talking to Pakistan at all, whether you should be having a Pakistani team coming here, questioning Indian officials, including questioning Indian IPS officers, when it has been India's position that they are the guys who are behind it all in the first place.
There are three broad principles. Number one, that, well, yes, we want peace and we want dialogue to take place between India and Pakistan. And that's the reason as to why Mr. Modi, day one, when he was into his swearing-in ceremony, he had invited the Pakistani Premier Nawaz Sharif. Number two, talks and terror cannot move together. Number three, that it has to be bilateral. There can be no third interference as far as talk between India and Pakistan is concerned. And this government has consistently adhered to these three broad principles as far as India-Pakistan dialogue is concerned, India-Pakistan engagement is concerned. Okay, now coming to the specifics of your question.
What would you say if somebody was to say... Yeah, Sambit, so what would you say if somebody was to say, should any protocol be followed with people who have beheaded our soldiers? This is akin to rubbing salt on the wounds of the nation. India must give it back to the terrorists in the only way that they understand. Would you agree with a statement like that?
No, in fact, we are giving back. The retaliation is at its best. If they, if in fact in the line of control they have fired, the retaliation has been in fact rightful. We have given more than what they had given us in retaliation. But As far as terrorism is concerned, as far as this particular question of whether a JIT should have been allowed into this country or not, and what changed between the Congress regime and our regime, because you began your question by saying that the same rhetorics have been followed by you, I would say no. Let's compare 2611 with Pathankot, because I think these are the two comparables which we have to look
so
into.
I'm giving you the
2611, Pakistan denied. All Pakistan right. denied. Pakistan said that
Pakistan
no.
Pakistan still denying. Pakistan and China yesterday blocked the naming of Masood Azhar as a terrorist. This happened yesterday. Who's not in denial? China wouldn't have done that on its own if Pakistan hadn't asked for it. Of course, Pakistan asked for it. And the reason I asked you that question is this particular statement. Our foreign minister went to Jaipur and served biryani for Pakistani guests, saying it is part of the protocol. Should any protocol be followed with people who have beheaded our soldiers? This is akin to rubbing salt on the wounds of the nation. This particular statement was actually made by Narendra Modi in Hyderabad in August 2013.
No, so what has changed between 2013 and 2016? I mean, what are you call as what are you calling it? What are you calling as protocol?
I'm calling if you say that a Pakistani JIT team sitting in Pathankot questioning an Indian police officer.
That is what you are calling as protocol.
No, I'm just simply questioning whether you're not inviting the same, you know, somebody comes in and burgles your house and you're calling that person and saying, just will you come here and question my, you know, the people who are working in my house and I'll see whether they may have stolen it by mistake. I think that's the point I'm trying to make.
I mean, look, after Pathankot, for the first time, Pakistan traveled from deniability, it has always been in a denial mode, to acceptability that, well, yes, perpetrators were from our side.
That's right.
Let's
how
investigate, let's punish those who are on our side. Let me complete a few sentences. Let me take a few questions of yours. Thereafter, you can cross-examine. The aim of Indian government is to see to it that the perpetrators of this dastardly act, what happened in Pathankot, are punished in Pakistan because there's where they live. So naturally, the legal requirements have to be fulfilled. What is the legal requirement? The legal requirement is, as in 2012, a judicial commission had come to India, including the lawyer of Lakhvi, to question the prosecution witness over here. Similarly, there is a JIT which has come over here to India, not to investigate, remember, but to cooperate in the investigation. So the Indian government has extracted cooperation from Pakistan. They would be given the evidences, which they have been. Only about few minutes ago, the NIA chief was addressing a press conference in which he has gone to the extent of naming all the evidences that has been handed over to them so that they see into the mirror and realize what they have done. And in fact, if you go into the newspapers a few days, very correctly they have stated that in fact the JIT has been rendered speechless after confronting the evidences that the NIA presented to them. So naturally, there are two things. One, we move towards our aim of seeing to it that the perpetrators are punished. And if, as you all would be saying, that Pakistan never learns from its mistake, this is how Pakistan is, Pakistan will never punish despite collecting all the evidences because that's what has happened in the past, then well, Vikram, we will call the bluff of Pakistan internationally. Look, we followed all the protocols, gave them the legal requirement, but okay, this is what is Pakistan, and then what we do is our step.
All right. Let me get everyone else's take on what you've just said, starting with you, Manishankar Iyer.
We've asked our 8 questions on the 28th of March through our spokesman, Sri Randeep Sarjewala. There has been no response, to the best of my knowledge, to those 8 questions. And so long as those 8 questions are not answered upfront and straightforwardly by the government, indeed by Prime Minister Narendra Modi himself, as demanded by our official spokesman, there will be cynicism on the Indian side, on the Congress side. However, I do think it is important for us to move at this stage beyond these polemics and go back to the origins of what has happened. And I would say the origins of the present visit of the JIT to India, the Pakistani JIT to India, lie in the agreement that was reached between Prime Minister Manmohan Singh and President Musharraf in Havana in September 2006, where the two agreed to put in place, and I quote, an India-Pakistan anti-terrorism institutional mechanism to identify and implement counter-terrorism initiatives and investigations. We also said, when the two foreign secretaries met, that these counter-terrorism measures should include regular and timely sharing of information. Now, after Bombay took place, the first thing that the Prime Minister of Pakistan did was to ring our Prime Minister and offer to send his Director General of the ISI. We accepted that. It was Pakistan that withdrew the offer, and after that, things went completely haywire. Now, I think the situation has come where we need to recognize that a confrontational attitude towards these investigations is not going to lead to a successful prosecution.
So you don't have a problem with the fact that an ISI officer actually did come to Patan
I personally
court.
Have none.
You personally have none. All right, Shehzad, Vice Air Chief Marshal Shehzad Chaudhary, let me just get your take, and I'm going to come to what Pakistan's been saying with regard to Mr. Yadav in a couple of minutes, but the fact that the JIT has come and is looking into Patan court, and as I'm saying, Bihar, it's happened at a time when we've just seen the blocking of the banning of Masood Azhar. In your view, is this a sincere intention by Pakistan to really try and find out what happened in Pathan court and, B, to actually punish whoever the perpetrator might have been? And if that perpetrator is Masood Azhar or somebody high up in the JEM, then Pakistan will follow it through all the way, unlike what has happened with Hafez Saeed and his ilk earlier in the day.
Well, you made a number of assumptions there and a number of conclusions there. But as far as the principle is concerned, I think it is one of the most significant step forwards between Pakistan and India in terms of trying to grapple with this problem of cross-border terrorism, alleged cross-border terrorism or terrorism on either sides. So therefore, that's a fact that we need to grapple with and work together with. And I think the joint anti-terror mechanism was a good format. Unfortunately, it got thrown out the moment Mumbai happened and we just let it through. We threw it out of the window. But now that we've made a fresh start, and especially Pathan court is a test case, now at what point do we take it to, we get to the roots of it, whether we read Masood Azhar or not, it's going to be an incremental process. And I think as long as we let that process take place, and I'm quite glad and happy to see that both India and Pakistan continue to work on those despite difficulties elsewhere. So I think that gives me hope in the sense that if we continue to realize the fact that, yes, we have a common threat, and we need to grapple with it and we need to fight it together. I think the light at the end of the tunnel is there, very much there for us to be able to move towards a direction.
All right. Mr. Parthasarathy, let me just get all of you in on this as well. So, I mean, as part of all of this, we are even hearing from Amit Shah saying, I believe that for the first time, Pakistan is making serious efforts in investigating a terror case. Would you share that optimism?
I would be more cautious. Having dealt with Pakistan, I succeeded Mani in Indira Gandhi's time in Karachi and thereafter as High Commissioner in Islamabad. There is a very strong nexus between the military and the terrorist groups. Political leaders, including the Prime Minister, count for nothing. The links with the Jaish-e-Mohammed are not quite as strong as the links with the Lashkar-e-Taiba. But let us not forget that the Jaish-e-Mohammed was responsible for an attempt to assassinate Musharraf. And that was acknowledged by Lieutenant General Javed Ashraf Qazi, a former DG of the ISI in the Pakistan Parliament. So the Jaish is very heavily protected by the military establishment. What I would say is the following. So far, we have given them everything to the extent that nobody in the world can now tell us we have not cooperated. I have my serious doubts, based on my long experience, whether they will go to the full extent. They may arrest one or two chota-mota chokras, but are they going to touch Masood Azhar? So, are they going to touch the leadership? My answer is, I fear still no. So second, I think despite this, we need to contain a process of engagement. I don't agree that the joint anti-terror mechanism was a worthwhile effort. Additional secretaries don't resolve these problems. What is better now is the two national security advisors and the foreign secretaries are keeping in touch. But again, let us wait till the snows melt in the Himalayas. We'll know to what extent infiltration will resume. They will play it cool and offer cooperation. But the real proof of the pudding is going to be in the eating. We can't be carrying this so long. Don't forget, we got so concentrated on this. We've forgotten about the attacks in Mumbai in 1993 and 2008. They are hoping that precisely you drag this on, we'll forget about this also. We have a short memory span.
Okay. Would you agree with what Mr. Parthasarathy said? And specifically what he's talking about Masood Azhar and Jim? Because frankly, for Pathankot to really work its way out, and assuming that the smoking gun is pointing to the JEM, it means taking some action against Masood Azhar. And given the timing of what's happened to the United Nations with China blocking his banning, would you be more skeptical?
The Pakistani investigators have come to India not for the first time. They came in 2012 and 2013 to investigate the Mumbai terror attack case. What happened in that case? No one has been brought to justice. Now, if anybody believes that the Pakistanis are going to bring anybody to justice in the Pathankot case, that person probably has been spending too much time reading about Alice in Wonderland. I'm more concerned about India's naivete. Forgetting Mumbai terror attacks of 2008, now we are demanding that Pakistan take action in the Pathankot case. When the next major terror attack happens in India, Pathankot will be forgotten. With India remaining focused on the last major terror attack, it is no surprise that Pakistan has failed to deliver even on the 1993 so-called Bombay bombings that remain till today the worst terrorist attack in India. You know, we're talking about Pakistan's involvement. That's apparent. It's about Indians augmenting to India's woes by treating this issue in a very cavalier manner. Now, by inviting Pakistani investigators to come to India to cooperate in criminal investigations, we have turned cross-border terrorism into a law and order issue, a policing issue. It is not a policing issue. It's a strategic issue whereby terrorists reared and sponsored by state actors in Pakistan carry out attacks in India. By inviting Pakistani investigators to come to India and to come to the crime scene and to aid Indian investigations and hoping that they will go back home and act against the sponsors and perpetrators of that act, India has done two things. One, first, it has underlined or accepted tacitly at least that cross-border terrorism is a law and order issue rather than a tool of strategic policy for Pakistan. More importantly, India has bought lock, stock and barrel the myth that terror groups like Jaish and Lashkar are independent of the Pakistani state. And worse still, what are the Pakistani investigators looking at in India? They're looking at the Pakistani fingerprints of the Pathankot attackers, fingerprints that the Indians have uncovered. In other words, we are helping the Pakistanis
to figure out how not to leave fingerprints.
Exactly. We are enabling Pakistan on Indian soil how to learn not to leave
any
telltale signs in future attacks.
All right.
I think, you know, the Indian naivete is so apparent and shows so shocking that I'm disturbed that this entire debate focuses on mundane issues.
Okay, fine. Brahma, let me just throw what Brahma just said to you. And also, part of what the Congress Party's reaction and attack was that, in a sense, by allowing that the clear line of no distinction between state and non-state actors in Pakistan has been breached to a motto by the BJP government in favor of the Pakistani army and the ISI. Would you agree? I mean, you heard what Brahma Chadani had to say, and the fact that ISI members are there in the team, do you think this entire question of, these are non-state actors and have nothing to do with the state, that particular line has now been endorsed, in a sense, by India?
Now, I'll give you a distinction with my limited knowledge. When the government says that, well, this is a distinction between state actors and the non-state actors, or the government doesn't do this, let me give you an example. Remember when the Pakistani army had in fact ambushed the Indian army and had beheaded the Indian army? Thereafter, the defense minister of the country then, Mr. A.K. Antony, made a statement saying that some people wearing the army fatigue had attacked the Indian army and beheaded some of our jawans. So that was when BJP objected, saying that this is a classic case where Indian state is saying that the non-state actors of the Pakistani were the ones who were involved in beheading the Indian army. Because you were saying that, well, there are some people who were dressed in army fatigues. Over here, in this case, in JIT case, look, Remember, we all have to agree on one point, that there are two situations. Either there is a war or there is a proxy war. As far as India and Pakistan is concerned,
that's not true
we
also.
All know that's, that there is
no war.
That's an absurd
assumption.
It's a situation.
And that's an absurd assumption.
In a situation, we have to have strategic proxy takes, you know. And in this particular case, when we have 2611 or we have Pathankot, the strategy of the country has to be, we have to get the terrorists punished. We have to expose Pakistan internationally as well.
Okay.
So when a JIT comes to this country, A, we first think that, well, Pakistan for the first time has accepted right. that, well, the perpetrators are from our place, has willfully said that we would cooperate. Let's see if it does not, we'll call the bluff. And the step thereafter, I would not be privy to the step that
okay.
the government would take thereafter.
All right,
but
me,
I'm sure this is not a Majboot Sarkar. This is a Majboot Sarkar. And the step is going to be quite an effective step.
You know, I'm a great believer in not in you know carrying a big stick but doing it quietly.
Okay, fine. Let me just get you in, and then I want to go back to Shehzad Chaudhary.
When this admission thing happened by Pakistan, that their soil had been used for Pathankot attack, I looked at it differently, in the sense that. If you think that, I thought that Pakistan has undergone a change of heart, no. If anybody thinks they will jettison the Kashmir agenda, no. If you think they will abandon anti-India, the thing, no. Absolutely.
None of that is supposed to be necessarily done. Cross-border terrorism comes to an end.
About any deliverables, no. So you asked a very pertinent question. What changed in last 2-3 years? And what made Pakistan do it? My conjecture was, there were huge internal compulsions that have built up in the last 2-3 years. For example, the attack on school, that was a turning point. The attack on the university. Karachi has been indirectly handed over to the military. Right?
Let me map out Pakistan.
The kidnapping industry, which is an offshoot of the jihadi industry, who all have been kidnapped. The Prime Minister's son, former Prime Minister's son, he continues to be in custody of jihadis.
Okay. So, Shehzad?
Just listen. Salman Taseer's son, just released after 4.5 years. The son-in-law of Chief of Joint Chiefs of Staff Committee, Pakistani ambassador to Afghanistan. So with this kind of, you know, the internal dynamics that are there in Pakistan with Zarbe as going on, with this latest attack in Iqbal Park in Lahore,
right.
I for one thought that external compulsions, yes, we cannot grudge the fact that fortunately or unfortunately the whole world, the western part of the world sees this as a nuclear flashpoints. And with these kind of internal happenings, I thought that probably Pakistan, even if temporarily, has begun to introspect itself. But I am sorry to say, with this Chinese veto thing, today I am a very, very dismayed person.
Okay.
A very disappointed person.
You think the Chinese veto signals that no, things are not changing?
Absolutely.
All right. Vice Marshal Shehzad Chaudhary, let me just come back to you for a minute. You know, actually, at the end of the day, whatever has been happening inside Pakistan for the last 5 years, 10 years, the number of deaths, the number of the horrific incidents like we've just seen happening at Lahore, has that really made Pakistan and a large number of people inside Pakistan and the Pakistani security establishment come to the rather firm realization that terrorists are a threat, not just to India, but to Pakistan itself? You can't have a good terrorist and you can't have a bad terrorist. Has that realization really come now, or has it not?
I want to go back to the argument of why Pathankot is important and why Mumbai hasn't gone waste in the sense of India's continuing to pursue their particular interest of making sure that the perpetrators of Mumbai are brought to justice. I don't think India has given that up, and India should not give that up. Let me suggest to you why Pathankot is important. Pathankot is important because what India and Pakistan could not do in Mumbai and let that opportunity go waste in sense of bringing about a coordinated investigation, a coordinated judicial process, I think was lost to us And therefore, the two sides continue to be in almost in the dark as to what to do with the fact now that we have a part of the evidence, but not the complete evidence. But let's leave that aside. So let Pathankot be that new beginning. And that is why Pathankot is important to both India and Pakistan. And I hope that some of your people in India begin to look at it from that point of view. Now, I've listened to the arguments of most of your panelists there. It is our wish today whether we want to root our argument in 1971, 1984, 1999, or 2008. Or you want to base it around Pathankot and presence of an Indian spy, Indian perpetrator of terrorism right on the soil of Pakistan who puts on an Indian uniform. Now, that is what is going to be the future challenge. We have a couple of things to look at. One, we have, as I agree with the part of the statement of one of your participants, that either you have a full war, a proxy war, or for that matter, something that is considered less than proxy in terms of perhaps a terror sort of a thing. And thirdly, the application of a war instrument that is perhaps being now seen in Balochistan. Now, these are the three elements that complicate the situation between India and Pakistan. And we, as sensible people, need to now realize the path that we have traversed in our relationship in the last about 30, 40, 50 years or so.
Yeah,
but Let me make a final comment on this.
Yeah.
I think we need to sit back, look at where we have reached. What are we doing to each other? You want to talk of proxy wars, you want to talk of active agents, you want to talk of state actors on each other's side, or what we have in our hand at this moment. I think,
you know, hang on, let's be very clear on this. Chaudhary, let's have a principle of equivalence.
I know Pakistan would like to have a principle of equivalence. Pakistan has sponsored cross-border terrorism in India for the better part of 30 years. And now you have one person who has been captured. And there's a lot of question marks about this so-called confession. I'm just coming to you in a minute. There's a person who's been captured who used to once be with the Indian Navy. He comes out 2 days later and makes a statement. He doesn't look like somebody making a confession. And I'm going to get the others to talk about it in that
sense. Vikram, you and I will not be able to resolve this on a television studio.
No.
But I think the best thing is to let the things evolve and develop.
But I'm just trying to question the principle of equivalence. You can't say, India does this, Pakistan does this. I just referred to that
as an example of how the future relationship between India and Pakistan stands further complex and complicated.
So let me get... So, seeing as Roy is blamed for just about everything in Pakistan, let me ask somebody who was with Roy, what do you make about Kulbhushan Yadav and his so-called confession?
Sir, I will go into the details later, but let me ask, I don't know, this Pakistani guest may go away. Rouhani was on a visit to Iran. They said very openly, their officialdom in the media, that this issue of the so-called Indian spy was discussed vigorously with the visiting dignitary. It was denied by Iran. I want this Pakistani guest on your channel to say whether the Iranian president was lying. I want him to categorically say this.
Yeah, I'm just asking you specifically about Kulbhushan Yadav. A man gets arrested 2 days. I mean, look, it's not completely out of the realms of possibility that there would be a Roy agent. There'll be a Roy agent inside Pakistan. The person could be captured, and then he could then be, you know, as would happen with a captured spy, beaten up, and he'd be asked to make a certain confession.
I'm just asking,
Arisen, and then I'll come to you in just in a couple of minutes. He didn't look like that at all.
So,
what would be your take?
What treatment was meted out to Saurabh Kalia? What happened to Hemraj? And today, they have somebody in custody. And, you know, laughingly, jokingly, questions are being put to him. And laughingly, they are being answered. Who will buy this, sir?
So you think the whole thing
Secondly, sir, today, I mean, you know, when you try and, write a very, you know, funny script, you tend to go wrong at some point. Today they have said, they have told the Iranians that there is another fellow by name of Rizwan. Actually, his name is Rakesh. He is a sub-inspector from RANW. Sir, let me tell you, there are no sub-inspectors and inspectors in RANW.
Yeah. So
the other point is, in this game of espionage, everybody knows that once you cultivate an asset, you always invariably disown him.
No, so that's what they are saying, that you're disowning him for that reason.
We have owned up every innocent person, even crooks like Dawood Ibrahim. We say that he is our man. He belongs to our country. So where is the question of not
owning up? India is not saying he is not an Indian national. India says he is an Indian national.
No, they never did in the case of in the Kargil war.
No, but I'm saying they India did is not saying, acknowledge India their legitimate saying, soldiers. India is saying that Kulbhushan Yadav is an Indian national.
Yes, absolutely, because he's innocent.
Okay. Shahzad Chaudhary, let me come back to you. A, President Rouhani, was he lying when he said there's no such thing, is the first question. And secondly, a person who 2 days after being captured, somewhat laughingly making remarks like, raw handlers go towards activities which are criminal, which are anti-national, which can lead to maiming or killing of people within Pakistan. Somebody who says stuff like that without any signs of coercion, it makes you wonder whether this is a genuine spy or not.
I too have had postings and appointments, not in the ISI, but as attaché abroad, and have been dealing with issues of this nature. And he knows it very well, that when you send agents abroad, and agents of the kind of 007 Commander Kulbhushan Yadav, they've obviously first evolved an identity, and then obviously you feel confident enough 13 years down the line to be able to do what he did. Now, that's something which is out there in the world, and it is not yet concluded. So let's wait for the time. That's the problem with India. Pakistan has a smoking gun today. And therefore, that's going to be difficult to deal with. But let's forget it right there. Now, coming to the question that gentleman asked.
A smoking gun isn't a smoking gun if it's a fake gun.
Let it be a fake gun. What are you worried about? Why are my Indian colleagues so concerned about a fake gun? Why take up so much of air issue and air time of your listeners on fake guns?
Because you're making the equivalence saying that...
Let's leave it aside.
You're making an equivalence between... You're saying that, Pakistan may have sponsored terrorism in India. Doesn't matter, India sponsored terrorism in Pakistan. That's why this is an issue.
Let me come to the question that he asked. The Prime Minister to Prime Minister, the President talks, which was the summit level talks, so to say, at the bilateral level... I am not certain. It never came out in the report that whether this problem was discussed or not. But as you know, the Chief of Army Staff called on the President of Iran and discussed the issue in threadbare with him, and told him about how Iran's soil is being used for fermenting trouble in Baluchistan. And that is where the truth and the lead of the entire story is.
May I make a broader point?
Rama.
The right of self-defense is a right enshrined in the UN Charter. The UN Charter describes it as an inherent right of every nation. Defending one's interests against a terrorism onslaught is a constitutional and moral obligation for any self-respecting country. Now ask yourself, has India imposed costs on Pakistan for the 30 years of proxy war that Pakistan has waged against India? Did India impose costs on Pakistan even for the bloody 2008 Mumbai terror attacks? If anybody can show any evidence that India has imposed costs on Pakistan, then I'm willing to rest my case. The fact is that Indian leaders have deterred, they have shied away from imposing costs, even though it's important to drive home the message to the other side. So the benefits of peaceful cooperation are to weigh hostilities.
I think all he needs to do is to listen to the Ajit Doval tapes on how he intends or India must respond to Pakistan. And he will get the answer of whatever has gone on.
How India will respond to Pakistan is a theoretical issue.
Loss of life in Baluchistan. Yeah. Well, he's actually putting it into place. We have a smoking gun in our hands, for God's sake.
No,
we have lost people in Baluchistan. We've lost people in Karachi. The Safura Goat incident where innocent people were killed in a bus. Ismailis were killed in a bus. Is the handiwork of RAW as told to us by
the US government has said repeatedly. One minute.
Wait.
How many we get you in some with quick reaction to what we've just heard.
In fact, I was listening to the Pakistani guest when he was trying to shift the attention towards RAW, towards the spy. And in fact, I was astonished that he was suggesting we should be watching Mr. Ajit Doval's tapes. I would say rather than watching anyone's tape, please watch someone's deeds. Watch the deeds of Pakistan. And the irony is, leave aside what Pakistan has been doing with India. Please, sir, leave aside what Pakistan has been doing to India and the global arena. Please watch your own home.
If I could just complete my argument, you know. An unconventional war can only be fought with an unconventional war. In theory, there's no other option, right? You can't fight an unconventional war by waging a full-fledged war. And nuclear weapons have no deterrence value in an unconventional war. Unfortunately, RAW is not ISI. RAW is an increasingly weak and ineffectual institution. It is not in a position to wage an unconventional war. In fact, the only place in the world where RAW is a threat is Pakistan, because they need to create a threat. Nowhere else is RAW seen as a threat.
If I can understand, so let me just come to all of you. If I can understand what Brahma is saying correctly, saying that RAW is probably not doing what the Pakistanis are saying that RAW is doing, because it doesn't have the capabilities quite to do so. And especially in 1997, you were well aware of it, when Mr. Gujral decided to wrap up all of RAW's functioning in Pakistan for some strange reason. After that, RAW may have never had those capabilities to do all that the Pakistanis think that RAW is doing. But he seems to be saying that if they were to do it, it wouldn't be a bad idea.
Look, Let us be clear of the present situation in Pakistan and the army. For the first time, the Pakistan army is fighting conflicts in all four provinces of Pakistan. They were fighting in Balochistan. 80,000 of them are fighting on the Afghan border, the Pashtuns. They've been fighting the Muhajirs in Karachi, and now they are fighting the southern Punjabis because there's a large Shia population. Therefore, the Pakistan army is fully stretched. It makes sense for them to tactically pretend to be reasonable. There is nothing to suggest that that is a strategic decision to go slow on terrorism. Therefore, by all means, talk with them through the NSAs, but keep a big stick ready. Second, I personally believe that the time has come to take note of the fact, I won't go as far as Brahma, that the army is fighting in four provinces. It is not the job of India to make life easier for the Pakistan army. And I leave it at that.
Far from actually countering Pakistan's proxy war through an unconventional war of India's own kind, the Indian leadership is sending repeatedly the wrong message to Pakistan. Example, before Modi visited Lahore, there was never a case in modern world history of a national leader visiting an enemy country with no preparatory work and no results to show. In fact, of the 35 countries Modi visited in the first 19 months in office, no country was so quick to make a payback to India as Pakistan. Now, why did he go to Lahore all of a sudden? Now, what did that visit yield? That visit yielded a series of terrorist attacks. Pathankot, Mazar-e-Sharif.
The Pakistani NSA called in and said 10 of our people are, 10 Pakistanis may have entered.
Rampur, Jalalabad, how many attacks will shake up India? Okay. And then, you know, to make matters worse, we have invited the JIT from Pakistan, enabling them on Indian soil to understand how not to leave Pakistani fingerprints in future attacks.
Right. Just one of, before I come to Manishankar Iyer and ask him strategically which he thinks is the better path, because we seem to be hearing two different paths on how to deal with Pakistan. Now, whether Kulbhushan Yadav is a genuine smoking gun, as Emmet Shehzad says he is, or he's not, as everyone else seems to be saying, does RAW have the capabilities that Brahma says it should start cultivating, and the capabilities of the Pakistanis seem to believe it does, that all troubles inside Pakistan are thanks to RAW?
First, with all responsibility at my command, I say Jadhav is not a spy. Second, I am not going to be provoked by his statements on any issue, whether about any intelligence organization or the desirability of, you know, the Prime Minister's visit. I am not going to go into that. But if you analyze all the attacks within Pakistan, they have all been suicide attacks by suicide bombers. Who prepares these suicide bombers? Whose product are they? The progenitor was the Pakistan military intelligence establishment. There are three products: the Tehreek-e-Taliban Afghanistan, Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan, and euphemistically speaking, the Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan military.
And
how do an intelligence organization in India produce suicide bombers? You take any attack in Pakistan, they've all been carried by jihadis, suicide bombers. Okay. Where do they incubate? In the madrasas. Are we running madrasas in Pakistan? I mean, what case is this? I can't understand.
At the end of the day, two, three different ways of dealing with Pakistan have come up just on the course of this program. You heard what Brahma said. Start imposing costs, and there are ways of imposing costs, and that's what we should be doing. He said, well, you know, a lot of what's happening in Pakistan has not been done by Raw. And then there's what we started by saying, call Pakistan, we have to work together, let's try and jointly find ways forward. What is the sensible way of handling Pakistan?
I have no desire to see my country as a mirror image of Pakistan. I do not believe that it would be appropriate for India to use the kind of mechanisms that Pakistan has been using, all of which have now been turned on Pakistan itself. Pakistan is at one and the same time the world's hub of terror, as also the world's biggest victim of terror. I don't want us in a confrontation with the Pakistanis where we pick up their tactics to become like Pakistan and to become the victims of our own people. I just want to say that I think this unidimensional view of Pakistan as being nothing but a terrorist state with no redeeming features is to create the kind of enemy you'd like to have. And Professor Chelani calling them an enemy country is not a word that I would use. In my experience, there are millions of Pakistanis who desire a better relationship with India. There are elements in the Pakistani establishment, civilian as well as military, as well as in the intelligence, who would like to work out a via media with India. And I would much rather that our policies cater to these people than to have the narrow-minded view that they're doing this to us, we're going to do this to them. Now that, I think, is a child's play that is suitable for a school maidan. It is not the way in which mature countries deal with each other. I believe in diplomacy. I do believe in the possibility of arriving at a conclusion. And when I see how the US-USSR confrontation right through the Cold War, that is 4 or 5 decades, was conducted and contained by having a continuous dialogue between the two enemy states. When, on the basis of my being posted in Vietnam, I saw the manner in which there were continuous discussions, negotiations every Thursday between the North Vietnamese and the Americans, even when the Americans dropped more bombs on North Vietnam than both sides had dropped on Europe during the Second World War. It seems to me that while we obviously have to carry a big stick, I don't think that's a new suggestion coming from Parthasarathy. While we must have a big stick, and we do have it, the more important thing is to work towards creating trust where trust doesn't exist and availing of trust where trust does exist. And if we don't have a dialogue with Pakistan, we will continue in this confrontationist mode, which can eventually only do us harm.
If Manishankar Iyer wants to remain an apologist for Pakistan, that's his choice. I don't think I can change.
I really
thinking.
Object to that. No. I am not in politics for Pakistan.
Well,
I'm in politics for India. There's no reason to believe India is the real India.
Well, you know, you defend Pakistan in a way that few Pakistanis can do. That's your choice. This debate is not about Manishankar Iyer. This debate is about India's choices, and let's stick to that. If Pakistan wants a detente with status quoist India, can easily get it. India is not a revisionist power. India is for the status quo. India is not seeking to unravel Pakistan. Pakistan can easily get a detente with India. But peace with India is not something that the Pakistani military can afford. Sorry. That is the reason why Pakistani military rears terror proxies as a highly cost-effective force multiplier against India. Now, let me come to the point about talks and engagement with Pakistan, that money raised. Other than the instrument of dialogue, India doesn't have any direct leverage over Pakistan. Therefore, the instrument of dialogue has to be used judiciously so as to help reform Pakistan's behavior. Okay. Now, if you're going to engage with them, hold talks with them, even when they're bleeding you, they have no incentive to reform themselves. In fact, if you have uninterrupted dialogue with Pakistan, as Pakistan wants, you actually embolden them to continue with their roguish conduct. All right. And to use talks as a cover to carry out attacks on India.
All right, Brahma. Now let me get final thoughts quickly from both of you. We're flying out of time.
Listen, Mani has a point. It's a neighbor with nuclear weapons. You have to engage them and talk to them. There are small sections of society there which favor a better relationship with India. We need to cultivate them.
A small segment of society.
A relatively small when it comes to the Punjab heartland, yes. But that's not the case in Sindh, Balochistan, or in the frontier province. The fact of the matter is you need to engage them and get them to put pressure. But let us be very, very clear. Keep this, as I said, the NSA's talks on contacts on terrorism going. Engage them. But at the same time, we cannot take this much longer. We have to raise the costs for Pakistan. One, diplomatically, by hardcore diplomacy on what we are doing and what they are doing. And it is having some results. More importantly, there are other means we have. Given the fact that the army is fighting its own people in three provinces, I think we can show some sympathy for those people that the army is fighting.
Show some sympathy for the people whom the army is okay, that's diplomatically put, but not that dissimilar to what Mr. Chalani was saying, I think. All right, let me get a quick final thought from you, then I want to get the audience in.
You know, it's often said that war is not an option. I'm not talking of war in the sense of that war. But let me tell you, also cannot be the case that Pakistan can continue with the proxy war in the shadow of nuclear weapons. So when on the strategic table, everything is justified, offensive, defensive, covert, overt, in dealing with the state. I mean, it is this is the case with every nation state, isn't it?
All right, we're going to have to leave it there on the big fight just for the moment. But I have to say, it is perhaps not going to be anytime soon that we are going to get a specific solution or a specific answer to how do you deal with the problem of Pakistan. For that matter, the entire global community and the world community hasn't really been able to figure out how to deal with a lot of the issues that are coming out of Pakistan. We will continue to keep track of them as they play out. That's it on this episode of The Big Fight. We'll be back next week. Bye for now.